From the newsroom of Impact Alpha, I'm Brian Walsh, and this is your Impact Briefing for Friday, December 1st. Yes, it's already December. On today's show, Impact Alpha's Amy Cortese speaks with Full Cycle's Stefan Niccolò at the start of COP28 to hear what he's expecting and hoping for at the Global Climate Summit in Dubai. But first, here's what you need to know from this week in Impact Investing. Speaking of COP28, climate tech innovation is making the scene in a big way. The nonprofit New Energy Nexus, NEX, is partnering with summit organizers to usher 100 startups through the NEX COP28 Climate Tech Startup Accelerator, designed to speed new technology, models, and materials for the low-carbon transition. At least 80% of the startups hail from the Global South. UAE, the host country, is leading its own Innovate for Climate Tech Coalition, which includes Chinese tech giant Tencent, to bridge the north-south divides around climate solutions and strengthen climate tech ecosystems. And how's this for catalytic capital? A $25 million guarantee from the MacArthur Foundation made possible a $111 million first loss reserve from the Dutch Development Bank FMO, which in turn catalyzed $1 billion for the SDG Loan Fund, designed to expand financing for small and growing businesses, resilient agriculture, and climate solutions in emerging markets. The German insurance giant Allianz and the Swedish bank Skandia anchor the new fund, one of the largest blended finance deals to date. This SDG loan fund could serve as a model for efforts to put private capital to work for the Sustainable Development Goals. Wealthy families and foundations also are leaning into climate finance, but many don't know where to start. The nonprofit network CREO identified 5 archetypes to guide families on their climate journeys: carve-outs, specialists, innovators, decarbonizers, and aligners. There's no one way to deploy capital for climate action. You can explore these 5 archetypes at impactalpha.com. And speaking of families, the $650 million family office Kennyarth rattled some cages this week with some inconvenient truth about impact investing. Diane Eisenberg, an heir to an oil and gas drilling fortune who lives on a sheep farm in Wales in the United Kingdom, has long chided her wealthy peers. If you're rich and you get your capital back with a bit extra for inflation and expenses, you'll still be rich tomorrow. Kennyarth pursues a strategy of impact-first capital preservation. Eisenberg and Kennyarth's Greg Nietzschen share 10 lessons from Kennyarth's 10 years of impact investing. Find these stories and more on impactalpha.com. And now it's time for this week's featured conversation. Full Cycle Stefan Niccolò was packing his bags and preparing to jet off to Dubai for the COP conference when Amy Cortese caught up with him to get his pre-conference predictions. Let's listen in.
So COP28 has been called the Petro COP. It's hosted by the United Arab Emirates, a big oil producing state, and presided over by the head of its national oil and gas company. And it started off on a bit of a sour note. What's your take on that, Stefan, and what might it mean for progress at this COP?
I mean, it is the elephant in the room. So I'm of two minds, right? I think by this point, you know me well. I'm both pragmatic and optimistic, and I think there's reason for both kind of approaches. I think the pragmatism is kind of pulls from, you know, kind of geopolitical ways of understanding the world. And that is to say, like, what's our status quo? Right, we're going to head to COP, and 85,000 people are going to have to make out of that gathering something meaningful that really kind of gives us the best shot on our trajectory through 2030. I think the optimistic side is, you know, maybe there's an opportunity here to, since at least state-owned and I think more generally fossil fuel industry and the fossil fuel industry and companies are kind of center stage at this COP. It really is time to shine a spotlight on that sector and say, well, what are the actions and commitments here that we can make that are meaningful? Are we going to get an agreement on phasing down fossil fuels? I've been seeing some language fly around that, you know, maybe is the middle ground between obstinate parties that don't want that to happen. And are we going to tackle the big levers of action, one of them being methane emissions, which I know we'll talk about, out of the fossil fuel industry, reducing methane and managing a phase down of extraction as swiftly and effectively as possible by tripling, quadrupling down into renewables, and making good on those commitments, meaning actually showing up next year at COP29 and demonstrating what results look like and what action looks like. I think we can get something out of this COP. But I, you know, like I said, I'm of two minds. I think a lot of folks who are way more experienced in this than me, some of the legends of COP, Christiana Figueres and Al Gore, are really down on this presidency's ability to deliver. I'm not quite there, but I'm watching carefully, and I'm playing a role that will hopefully help us to steer this gathering toward success. And if we can collectively do that, then I think it doesn't matter really who's in charge. I think it's really about kind of what are we all going to coalesce around as the action items that will make this COP successful. And if we can do that, I think you know, it's worth going, and it's worth having the exercise of going through making an agreement that we all can agree to.
Great. So let's talk about methane. 2 years ago at COP26 in Glasgow, there was a global methane reduction pledge that has been signed by 150 countries. And this week, we had ExxonMobil say for the first time that it would start measuring and reporting on its methane emissions. Stefan, you, through Full Cycle Capital, your VC firm, and your Astra project initiative, you're doing a lot of work on this. What's the opportunity here with methane, and what do you hope to see at COP?
Yeah, I mean, I think methane is going to be the big topic of COP this year, where I think we can all figure out ways to plug in and find success. What we've noticed, and the reason Astra Project exists, is because the connectivity between the ambition as stated, and the series of actions necessary to really implement that is sometimes missing and sometimes frail. And so if we can start to strengthen those connection points and allow the private sector, where possible, to take the baton from the public sector commitments and actually do the work of transforming large-scale assets in not just fossil fuels, but agriculture, in waste, to make better use of biomass, to steward and manage land better, then I think we have an opportunity for building and compounding our efforts that we've taken so seriously these last 2 years. We have an opportunity here to really activate this lever of action. And, you know, one of the things we're doing is kind of, we now know the stat methane is 80 to 86 times more heat trapping than CO2. But now if we go a layer deeper, we can really see what the opportunity looks like. So for example, methane does its worst warming not in the first 20 years, but really in the first 12 and a half years. Meaning, what are the problematic areas today? And can we project where methane will come from in 12 and a half years and start to build solutions to meet that kind of ascent of new sources of methane? So one example is, unfortunately, more of the world, not less of the world, is eating beef, consuming milk and dairy. And so it's great that we're talking about methane from fossil fuels, right? But if we're not prepared to also activate the interventions that will exist in ag generally and specifically around cows and ruminant animals and their emissions, then we're not looking at the whole pie and we're not taking our best strategic shot at mitigating methane emissions and having the biggest and most outsized impact. I'm so, like, I'm really heartened that we may actually get a real agreement between state-owned oil companies around fossil fuel production and use. But that's only 19% of the pie, right? So if we're trying to reduce methane emissions by 75%, we're going to have to go after the rest of the pie. And that is a much broader solution set that we know of, that we know these what these interventions are. It's just about flowing the capital and resources to them. And activating the different industries that play a role in methane emissions. So I'm feeling good about the prospects here, but we've got a lot of work ahead, and that's what the 2 weeks are for.
Great. So what other things are you looking out for at COP this year, and what sort of progress are you hoping for?
Yeah, I mean, I think if we come out of this COP with a strengthened ambition around methane, that's one component of success. I'm personally looking for stronger language around phasing down of fossil fuel extraction and production. That's not just oil and gas, it's coal as well. I'm really looking at, you know, what will this newly structured partnership between the United States and China yield? Last time we had this kind of pre-COP partnership between the two countries, we got the Paris Agreement, right? We have been able to see success when we actually align around our shared interests. And I think we have a good setting for more of that success to happen by virtue of that alignment. I'm looking at loss and damage. And my hope is that we come out of it with real mechanisms for funding, a role for the multilaterals, a schedule on which funding can flow, and less obstination from countries, primarily in the global north, that need to play a role and maybe are starting to press back against what this could possibly look like. I mean, it's really important that I think we make a stride forward here. And if we can do it based off the work of last year, I think that'll be successful. Let's see what else we can get out of this COP in terms of representation for indigenous folks and youth. I think those are voices and groups that have been louder and louder over the years. And I think, you know, finally, it's kind of, what are we going to do about the lack of connectivity between nature and our approach to climate? We talk a lot about emissions. We talk a lot about technologies. We talk a lot about fossil fuels. But we forget that without stewarding, conserving, and regenerating nature, we won't even get close. So this, you know, and we saw a lot of progress out of COP15 last year in Montreal. So now this is kind of, you know, how do we plug that in to a much broader framework that integrates our efforts and allows for the right incentives, subsidies, structures to flow towards the conservation of nature, as well as the reduction of emissions.
So we had a story this week about the need for creative finance at COP this year. Hundreds of billions, even trillions of dollars are needed each year to mitigate and adapt to climate change. But then you have countries like the US that are constrained by domestic concerns, politics, inflation, war, et cetera. So here we are again. It's the perpetual question. Where's the funding going to come from?
Yeah. Still to this day, the question that we will be asking at the COP, right? I think last year I chuckled at some of the signage. It was actually pretty serious, but it said, WTF, where's the funding? And you know, the reality is, so there's two realities here. One is we haven't moved a fraction of the capital necessary to get all of these things done, not a fraction of it. And so we really do have a lot of work to do. I think part of the other reality, or the additional reality there, is that we have a lot of opportunity now to think about the new business models, the new ways we flow capital. There are more climate funds coming into the scene today than ever before. A lot of them, you know, we know from our work at Full Cycle. And I think the multilaterals, specifically the World Bank with its new leadership, you know, now has a new mandate where we can start to see perhaps an example amongst the multilaterals and the development banks that really puts climate first and unlocks the, you know, trillions of dollars that these institutions manage and does so in a way that activates and spurs the private markets to also dive in and make these investments into all sorts of low carbon tech infrastructure companies and the things that we need to do to finance better stewardship of nature. And so I, you know, my hope is that, you know, the coordination on the finance side is as serious as it seems in a way that, you know, we haven't seen before, right? I've been waiting for these conversations to really pick up in a way that identifies that not all capital is the same, and that we have to be able to invite different levels of risk, different types of underwriting, and start to blend it together to get these solutions financed and scaled. And so I'm hopeful, right? I know these will be big conversations, but I think we have more of the building blocks today than we've had ever before. But it really is going to rely on the leadership of these institutions to meaningfully commit and move capital in the right direction. You know, we've got to get really strict about that and start pricing in the real cost of doing business there. And I have a feeling markets will correct themselves once we do that, and we'll start to see that capital flow towards, say, the tripling of renewables that's been stated as a goal out of this COP. Well, that's going to take a lot of capital, and I happen to know or have an idea, as it were, as to where we can find it.
Speaking of funds, we've been hearing that the UAE, the host country, is going to launch a big multi-billion dollar climate fund of some sort that it would put up the initial capital for. And it's sort of an irony that, you know, as I was saying, the Western governments are a little bit hamstrung these days, but, you know, you have the Middle Eastern oil powers are rolling in dough and actually bankrolling a lot of the energy transition.
Yeah. So look, here's an area where we actually might get something surprising and successful. A lot can happen when you have that kind of capital and wealth accumulated in one place. And, you know, you can kind of see it by the advent of these mega projects that are things the likes of which we have never seen before. When you have trillions of dollars kind of sitting around, you can start to invent some things. And I hope that this vehicle that I've been hearing about as well, not only gets structured well, is well funded, that other countries pile in and put their capital in. But the key here is that this vehicle be fit for purpose. And what I mean by that is we already have several examples of vehicles that are designed to deploy capital into climate funds, into climate infrastructure, into adaptation that take 2.5 years to get the capital out the door. So we can't have that again if we're designing both this vehicle, the loss and damage vehicle, and other mechanisms from scratch. Let's really identify that the capital needs to flow in a way that galvanizes additional capital, that mitigates risk, and that accelerates the solutions that we know can work all at the same time.
Well, thank you, Stefan. And before you rush off to catch your flight, any parting thoughts or things that you want to bring up about this COP?
I mean, honestly, I think we got to everything. I would just say, you know, let's hang tight and see what leadership can emerge out of this COP. And, you know, over the years, I have just seen the most incredible demonstrations of, you know, people from around the world coming to COP, frankly, not really knowing what the thing is or how they can effectuate it, and coming out of COP, you know, in my mind, heroes, people who really, you know, put it on the line and push the negotiators and push the private sector to make bigger commitments, to have accountability. Let's watch this leadership emerge. It's what we're going to need. You know, there's an old guard in climate that is aging. And I think, you know, looking for the right leadership to hand the baton to and for folks to make it count. And I think there's a whole class of folks. There's a reason it's gone from, you know, 50,000 people in Sharm to 85,000 people projected to come to Dubai. Almost the entirety of that delta is private sector, our NGOs, our indigenous folks, our youth leaders. Let's watch this leadership rise and see what's possible when a new guard comes to the fore and makes the demands for better climate action, better strategic thinking, and more accountability at the table. I think we might see some surprises out of this COP.
After that conversation was recorded, on the first day of the talks, an initial agreement on a loss and damage fund was reached. As of this recording, host country UAE and Germany have both pledged $100 million to the fund, which is designed to assist poor countries facing outsized climate impacts. That's going to do it for this week's Impact Briefing. Thanks to Stefan, Amy, and our producer extraordinaire, Isaac Silk. Sign up for Impact Alpha Open, our free weekly newsletter, directly at impactalpha.com, or become a subscriber to get full access to our award-winning daily coverage in impact investing and sustainable finance. Just go to impactalpha.com/subscribe. I'm Brian Walsh. Be sure to check back for next week's briefing. Until then, take good care.